Hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to the Beautiful Legacy Podcast. I am your host, Abigail Gagnon, and today we have one of my podcast fam that I met through the Marco Polo Ambassador Program with us today, and we are going to talk all about rediscovering joy, finding joy in the small things, and about her journey with her son's health, and I'm sure other things mixed in there as well. I'm so glad to have Chelsea with us today. Chelsea, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for having me on. I am Chelsea Hansen. I consider my like stage name Chelsea B because my middle name is B, B-E-A. So you might see me around as Chelsea B. But that is me. I am 30 years old, born and raised in Arizona, a bunch of different little towns in Arizona, but it's a small town. I mean, a bunch of different small towns, but all Arizona nonetheless. I have two kids. I have been married for 12 or 13 years, depending on how good I do my math in my head. And yeah, that's me. I've always taken little jobs here and there to, you know, pay the bills, but my main priority has always been my little family.
I absolutely love that. And like I said, I'm so glad to have you with us today. Now, for those that may have found this episode because you listened to Chelsea's podcast, which we will talk about in a little bit, you may kind of know a little bit of this story, but for those that haven't listened to your podcast, can you tell us a little bit about your journey with Jackson's health?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, I have two kids. My first is Charlie. She is, how old is she? She's going to be 10 in July. And then my second child is Jackson, and he is about to be 7 in June. So sometimes I feel like beating a dead horse, you know, because I've told this story so many times, but I'm going to tell it like these people are all hearing it for the first time. So when I was 23 weeks pregnant with my son, Jackson, they found that there was a major heart defect complication with his heart. He actually was able to go full term and be born naturally, stayed 16 days in the NICU and was on some like diuretics and stuff because basically the middle wall of his heart was missing. It's called complete avioseptal defect. So basically the middle wall of his heart was missing and the one valve, the two valves was really just one big valve. So all of his oxygen was mixing. So his body's natural response was to his pulmonary artery was actually, they tend to do this if your lungs are being filled with blood because of the oxygen and the, I don't know. I should be smarter. It's been like 6 years. So my words are not as specific as they once were, but basically your body tries to protect itself from flooding with fluid. So sometimes that pulmonary artery will close a little bit, but we didn't know that. That's very rare. So he came out, spent 16 days in the NICU, came home. When he was finally 4 months, they were able to operate on him. And he went in for his first heart surgery in October 2017. And it was all, I felt totally calm. Everything was all good. And I was like, yeah, just normal, you know, go get heart surgery. And then 10 to 14 days later, he'd be out and we could move on with our life. Like this never happened. And unfortunately, after his first surgery, that pulmonary hypertension came about. And so when his heart was repaired, his body freaked out about the correct amount of blood flow and his pulmonary artery just clamped shut, which caused him to go into cardiac arrest. And my husband and I were in the room and it was pretty traumatizing for me. And that moment kind of changed my life forever. Now he going on with the story, he's had two more heart surgeries. He's had a pacemaker put in. He's had a G tube. It's just been a pretty traumatic experience for our family. But he is pretty much fine, except now we just found out he has to have another surgery coming this June because he has a fake valve. That first surgery didn't go as planned and his mitral valve was leaking quite a bit. So he had to go back in for a fake mitral valve. And then he had to have that replaced in 2020. And so now it's gearing up to replace it again this summer. So that's kind of like the short story with everything all mixed up.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing that with us. That would be, I can't imagine, that must be like, would have been so traumatic to have been in the room when that happened. I mean, obviously, even if you weren't in the room, finding out that it happened would be traumatic, but watching it happen, I cannot imagine. And I know that we had kind of talked a little bit about like different questions that I may ask. And one thing that I hadn't told you in advance, because I just thought of it, so you might not have an answer, but do you
That's
know?
That's okay. Just totally let everything roll with it. I just wanted kind of an idea of where you wanted to go. So ask anything. Nope. That's the beauty of it.
Exactly. Well, my question was going to be, do you know, like, for anyone listening that may in the future or may currently have babies in the NICU or know someone who has babies in the NICU, do you know of any resources like for families for support?
In every hospital is going to be different, you know, but there is definitely, I would say, ask for Child Life at your hospital. Child Life specialists are usually always there, at least they are at Phoenix Children's, and they are a huge help. They helped us like get the room comfortable for when my older daughter Charlie was there, and giving her like her safe space and teaching us how to talk to her. And now that he's older, you know, we have to figure out how to talk to him because he's more aware of what's going on. So Child Life is huge. There's a group, I really don't know if it's worldwide or just Arizona, but there is a group called Raising Special Kids that's a huge support, and they can get you in contact with another family with the same diagnosis so that you could chat with them. And Facebook actually was huge when I first started. There's so many Facebook groups. You could type in your exact, like, you could literally type in NICU moms, and then you can find support and resources, and then they usually are specific in your area. So there's a ton of, you know, once you've gone through this, generally you want to help other moms. Like, it brings joy back into your life to help other people going through it. So if you're at the hospital, Phoenix, or not Phoenix Children, if you're at the hospital, Child Life is awesome. But if you're not at the hospital, definitely log into Facebook, type in specific searches for groups, and you'll find moms and families that are just eager to connect.
I love that. That is one thing that I think is really important when we go through really dark things, to be able to be there for other people, because I think that it makes the world feel so much less big and scary when we have people, even if it's not physically with us, that can help us along the journey and that have been through something similar, so we know like that we aren't alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how did his health and his still like ongoing health issues, how has that impacted you, like emotionally, mentally, spiritually, all the things?
All the ease. definitely. So my mind goes first to spiritually, honestly. It was tough. It's definitely a faith changer, tester. Before his second surgery, I had decided, like, I'm going to have everyone fast and pray, and we're going to post it on Facebook, and everyone's going to pray, because he was getting this surgery. He was the first kid in Arizona to have this specific surgery, putting a fake valve in the mitral position. It's pretty new technology in 2017, and the Arizona surgeon had never done it. It's called the Melody valve, which usually goes in the adult's pulmonary artery. It can balloon and be put in like laparoscopically. I think that's the right word. But they were going to sew some tissue on it, put it in his valve through open heart surgery, and then balloon it to the right size. And it was supposed to be able to balloon to different sizes as he grew. So he was the first kid in Arizona to have that surgery. So the doctor was like, I think I can repair it without having to do the Melody valve. However, I am prepared to do the Melody valve if I have to. So I was like, okay, we just need everyone to have faith and pray for a miracle that the doctor will be able to repair it and he won't need a fake valve. And I remember having specifically a spiritual experience the night before his surgery, and it just felt like there were so many people in the room. It just felt like I couldn't move, but it was just me and him. So I definitely felt angels from the other side. And I just knew that he was gonna just get fixed and it would all be over. That was my mindset. Like, this will all be over soon. We just need a miracle and everyone's gonna fast. And I felt like I knew without a doubt that he was gonna be able to be repaired instead of having the replacement. And so the surgery, his second surgery, was so long. The doctor came out and he looked like he'd been like hit by a truck. It was exhausting, I'm sure. And he did not fix or repair the heart. He had to replace it. And my faith was totally shaken because I was like, I believed in miracles. I had the mustard seed of faith and I knew without a doubt. So it's been a lot of relearning how to trust in God's will and not your own, and recognizing God's timing. So it definitely changed me spiritually. My faith is almost deeper. Like, you know, when Jesus asked for the cup to be removed and the cup doesn't get to be removed, I now have faith that God has a plan and he's going to do what he wants anyway. Sometimes I feel sassy, like, well, might as well not pray for that because God's going to do what he wants anyway. But I forget about the miracle that is Jackson is still alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the miracles aren't what we want them to be, but that doesn't make them not a miracle.
I completely agree.
Right? And then there's times when, like, you can feel frustrated because other people get their miracles and it's like, well, why did they get a miracle and I didn't? So it's trying to learn and connect with my spirit about what the miracle is for me. Maybe the miracle is that I get to connect with people now. Maybe the miracle is something else. So spiritually has been a lot. Emotionally, I just feel like my brain is kind of broken. Mm-hmm. My family struggles with mental health and I always had anxiety, but I never had depression. And since going through everything with him, I have pretty severe depression. It must have triggered something in my genetics.
Mm-hmm.
What were the spiritually, mentally, physically? It hasn't really affected me physically.
Well, that's a good thing.
I guess I want to take care of my body and my heart, and I keep an eye on, you know, what we eat and that kind of stuff. But definitely mentally and spiritually, emotionally, those are the most affected areas.
Mm-hmm. That makes complete sense. I know for me, like with my health struggles, sometimes it can be hard because when it started to get worse, I remember praying for God to just fix me. And there are sometimes still where they'll be like, I just want to wake up tomorrow and not be in pain. But at the same time, like you said, we just need to trust that he has a better plan. And even if it's not ours, like my pastor has been preaching the past couple weeks, a series on how oftentimes we think that things are plot holes in our lives, but they're actually plot twists. Mm-hmm. And it's been really encouraging to me to remember that even when the answer is no, or the answer is not yet, that doesn't mean, like you said, that there isn't some form of miracle within that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, am I still struggling with chronic health issues? Yes. And it's really hard some days. But because of that, I've been able to have the time and ability to have this podcast, be able to connect with people in ways that I wouldn't be able to connect with them if I was working all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there are still some days where I feel bad, you know, if money is tight and I'm like, I feel like it's my fault, even though it's not, that I can't work and
yes.
Things like that. But at the same time, I do my best to try to focus on the things that I can do and not the things that I can't.
Yeah. And I kind of like my brain first went to, you know, when you asked how I've been affected, my brain first went to like all the horrible things, but other ways that it's affected me emotionally, spiritually, like I used to be very, I don't know, vanilla and one mindset and mm-hmm. thinking if you weren't like me, then you weren't right. Not on purpose, but I was like a little bit judgmental and harsh. And going through this has given me the capacity to love that I never imagined. Like, I used to think, if you don't believe in God, then you're wrong, you know? But now I'm like, I see that there's different lenses and there's different people, and you literally never know what's going on in someone's life. And so I have this capacity to, I always say it's like a jar. Like, a jar can only hold so much, but if you break the jar, there's little pieces of that jar that can spread so much further than that jar itself could hold. So now I have the ability to take all these broken pieces of me that actually, and share it more and encompass more, you know, wrap it around all the things I want it to fit around in the shattered pieces, instead of just being the jar that can hold a cup of water.
I love that analogy. I think you know that I speak and think in analogies a lot, so I like that.
Like, I just imagine, like, all my little shattered pieces, like, how far they can spread. You know, when a glass breaks and, you know, it's like 3 days later and you're in a different room and you step on a piece of glass and you're like, how'd this get all the way over here? Well, because it was broken, it could travel further.
Exactly. Especially, we have hardwood floors. So I feel like it's very hard to get every single piece, especially if it's a clear glass, because then it's very hard to see it on hardwood floor. And I know that you kind of touched on this a little bit, but how has it translated into the rest of your life with the changes that you feel emotionally and spiritually and mentally?
I think it definitely is, you know, like the fire that, you know, the fire that makes you better. What is that? Like, purifies. Is that what it's called when they purify something in the fire or whatever? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. I would think that's a good word.
Yeah. So
I feel like there's another word you could use, but.
But I can't think of it right now.
I can't either.
That's another thing about me, is my English is not great and it is my first language. So I just make up other words that try to figure out what I'm saying. But so it's like forged in the fire.
Yes, there we go.
So I feel like what I've learned mostly is that literally every single person you encounter has a story and has something that they're going through, that they will be going through, or that they've been through. And I think that the reason this is my own personal belief, but the reason God makes us go through those things is because he didn't want us to walk this life alone, and it makes us need other people. It makes us have to reach out and connect, and it turns us into those beautiful, you know, the diamond under pressure or whatever. These hard things either can make us bitter or they can make us better, and then we're more fully better to serve the people around us. And so I think that's been the biggest thing, is when I can get out of my, you know, depression, when I can, which also, I used to never believe in medicine. Like, why can't you just change your thoughts? Why can't you just be happy? When people would say they have depression, never understood. And now I'm like, oh wow, if I skip my medicine, I really do have like these spiraling, endless thoughts of despair. And if I take my medicine, I'm like balanced and functioning. So that made me eat my words that way. But I just feel like I just have the capacity to love more and to accept others and to have open-mindedness and to realize it's not really a linear life. It's kind of deeper, and I don't know exactly how to explain it. I just feel deeper than I did before.
I completely agree with you. I can relate in many ways with different things I've been through. I feel like it gives you more empathy for others that have been through it, and realize that even if you didn't seek help while you were going through it, it makes you want to be able to be that for other people, because you either didn't have it or didn't have the strength or courage to ask for it. So you want to encourage other people to do the same.
Yeah. And it's making me learn things that I wouldn't have learned before, like being patient with myself and uncovering things from, you know, going to therapy for all of this brings up childhood stuff. And it's kind of like redesigning myself, because I was one way before and I'm a different way after. And, you know, for a long time I have been focused on the bad parts of the after me. Like, I used to be happy and fun and la la la. But And now I'm like, now I'm miserable and blah, blah, blah. But now I need to refocus that and be like, well, now I have the capacity to love. And now I have the capacity to serve. And now I can relate to people better. So the different Chelsea might not be a bad thing.
Yes, absolutely. Different doesn't necessarily mean worse. It can also mean better.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some other big things that you would say have really impacted your, like the above, the emotional and mental and spiritual and all of that within the last few years? Because I'm sure that his health is not the only thing that's impacted that.
Right. I think my brain chooses to think about that. But I think navigating depression is really interesting. My husband has to be really patient with me. So marriage can be difficult at times when someone else is depending on that. You know, we're depending on each other and I'm not 100%. So he has to be patient. And I think I feel odd about my career because I've always just, you know, family's been first. And so I change my mind a lot. My friends always are like, what are you doing now, Chelsea? What are you doing now, Chelsea? Because I'm always doing a different job. And mm-hmm. sometimes I feel bad about that. Like, man, why can't I just hold down a job? And I realize I'm looking for like a purpose and I'm not going to stay in something that makes me unhappy. So I just move to the next thing. But I know a lot of people don't get to do that. I am very privileged because my husband takes such good care of us. So I have that opportunity. But I definitely have come face to face with myself and have had to learn to love myself and to find joy in just what I am and the little moments of, you know, maybe I don't find joy in my career right now. Maybe I find joy in, you know, I work with special needs kids right now. So when the kid gets done what he needs to do at school, that brings me joy. The other day I was sitting at lunch and there was a bird building its nest and the one bird would fly away and find a stick. And we go to the park for lunch. So we were outside. And one bird would fly away and find a stick and he wouldn't just pick up every stick. He would like pick up one, put it back down, find another one and then fly it up and hand it to the girl bird in the nest. And then the girl would pack the nest all in together and he'd fly back down. For 30 minutes I sat and watched this bird build a nest. And lately it's been animals. Like there was a bunny rabbit the other day, like hopping slowly across the road. And there was this duck family with all their little ducklings following them. And there's these flowers on the way to school that smell like cotton candy. And I love to just stop and smell them. So I think just trying to stay in the present moment is what I do now, because when I'm thinking about everything and I totally went away from the question now, but
that's okay. That is okay.
I think I've had to come face to face with myself and rediscover myself and be in the present moment instead of thinking all the huge things and all the hard things and everything, just trying to stay present.
Absolutely. I think oftentimes, and it's not always the case, like you said, sometimes medication is important and I'm not saying that it's not and therapy isn't important, but I think that a lot of the time what we look for, we'll find. So if we're sitting here trying to think of all the bad things that are going on in our life and all the reasons that we could be depressed and all the reasons that we could be sad or miserable, whatever, we're going to be able to find and nitpick our entire life and find ways that could be better mm-hmm. and all of that. But if we choose to try to look for the things that could make us happy and the things that can bring us joy, we're going to find it, even if it's just a small little glimmer of that mm-hmm. in the midst of all the bad stuff.
Exactly. I finally found the right medication for me. And so it's harder for me to think, like if you'd have asked me 4 weeks ago when I was on a different medication, I could have told you all the horrible things that have been happening to me. But lately I just feel so grateful for mm-hmm. things. And I feel like I'm in a really good place right now.
I love that for you.
Me too.
That makes me so happy.
In time for my kid to have another surgery.
Exactly. See, that's a good thing.
That's the miracle.
Yes, exactly. And I know that I touched on it a little bit at the beginning, but I know that you have a podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What's the podcast called?
My podcast is called Beyond the Picket Fence, and it was an idea that was rolling around in my mind for a long time, even before my son. But then, especially after my son, there was a specific moment when my son was withdrawing from drugs after his surgery, and I was just at the lowest of lows, and I had to reach out to my community for help. And that's where this passion for like deep, authentic vulnerability and connection kind of ignited, because as these women were coming into my home, they were opening up to me about their lives and their problems. And that's when I realized, wow, no one's life is perfect. And I have a specific friend who was going through really hard things in her marriage, addiction, you know, all of the stuff, infidelity. It was just so, and I, whenever I would feel quote unquote miserable in my marriage, I would look at her marriage and be like, oh, they have it all together. They figured it out. And then I found out, you know, he's an addict and blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, oh my gosh, you really never know. So the whole idea of my podcast is kind of like yours, to hear your stories, but in a way to help us remember that, you know, other people, nobody, you really have to choose kindness, because you never know what's going on behind the scenes in someone's lives, which beyond the picket fence, because, you know, the picket fence is the perfect, you know, what you see on Facebook, what you see on Instagram, everyone puts their perfection kind of blasted. And so we are one of the most connected socially generations, but most lonely, because we're all comparing to each other's perfect moments and not recognizing what's going on behind the scenes.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. I think that it's important not to make your, you know, make all your posts be about how horrible your life is. But I think that there should be a balance of being real and authentic and sharing your struggles and not just sharing your highs, because there are going to be those people that are scrolling through their feed and think that you and everyone else has their life together, and it's going to make them feel like they're even more alone and even more of a failure because they're not seeing the authenticity behind people's posts.
Right. Yeah, it's so true. And even when you're just like at the grocery store, I find myself like looking at people wondering what their story is. And I have this weird talent of like, we went to a golf tournament, and by the end of the golf tournament, the guy that holds the be quiet sign was like crying to me, telling me about his wife that just passed away. And my husband's like, why do you have to make everyone cry? I'm like, I don't know. I just want to hear their, people want to tell their stories.
I love that. I often think that too, like when I look around when we're out in public, or even my husband thinks this is so creepy and weird, but when we are driving, especially at night, and you can, like, it's all dark, but you can see like lights in people's windows. I just wonder sometimes, like, how was their day? Did they have a good day?
Yes.
Are they miserable? Are they happy? You know, did they have a stressful day? Did they have a great day? Like, what's going on in their life? And he's like, why are you looking in people's houses? And I'm like, I'm not. We're just driving. And like, when I see their lights on, it just makes me wonder, like, who they are. What's their story?
Yeah, because we really will only ever know what's going on in our own mind. Like, we really can only see the life through our lens. But just like, yeah, my brain goes there all the time. I'm like, I wonder what happened in their day today. Or I wonder what battles they're fighting internally, or all these things. And I'm just brave enough to ask people and make it awkward, because that's just who I am.
I feel like sometimes in public, like if we're depending on like what situation we're in, I might ask, but obviously I'm not going to go up to someone's house in the dark of night,
knock on the door.
Hi, I saw your light on. I want to know, did you have a good day today? Like, that would just be so creepy and weird.
Oh my gosh. Like, how are you? I do think there also needs to be like a better way to meet people, instead of saying like, how are you? Or like, what do you do for work? Those are always the first questions, but how do we get deeper and find really, because how often do you ask how someone is and you don't really care about the answer? I mean, probably you, not very often, but most people.
Exactly. There was a couple of people when I worked at the camp, and I understand that we were so busy, you know, with everything, but sometimes people would ask, like, how are you doing? And then they would start walking away as you would answer. And you'd be like, do you really want to know the answer? Like, I'm so confused. But yeah, I definitely think that people often ask, like, what do you do? And like, for me, I feel like because I'm not working, a lot of people, not a lot of people, but some people in my life and some people that I meet will ask, like, oh, what do you do for work? And then when I say, like, I'm not able to work because of my chronic illness, they're like, oh, what's your husband do for work? How's your husband's job? And it's like, but I'm not just what I do for work if I were working.
Yes,
like, there's exactly. So much more to me.
And that's why sometimes I feel embarrassed, because people are like, what do you do for work? And I'm like, well, last year I worked at a carpet cleaning company. This year I'm a parent for special needs. Next year I'm really trying to become a flight attendant, because that's what I wanted to do before I got married. So that's my current endeavor. But I think that hopefully will be a long-term one. But I'm like a little scared, because, you know, what if it doesn't work out? And then what am I going to do next? But if I come back from that and I just think, well, what am I? Okay, I have one more thing to say. I went to Karchner Caverns yesterday on a field trip, which is a cave in Arizona with beautiful, like, stalactites and stalagmites and all these things that are formed one drip at a time over millions and millions of years. And this cave is like, people travel from everywhere to come and see it, to see these things that have been growing. And I just thought, like, man, those formations literally didn't have to do anything to be of worth. People come around from everywhere to see their beauty, and they're literally just being. They're not, you know, serving a purpose, being like a cell phone or anything like that. These things are just literally sitting there for millions of years, and that is enough. And I was thinking, man, how can I look at myself like those stalagmites and see, just as I am, we are already of worth as we are, and we get to choose what we want to do with our lives. So that's where it comes back to, like, you know, being in the moment and, you know, the person I am, regardless of all the 300 jobs I've different jobs that I've done, there's still a great person inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
Or
absolutely. Absolutely. I think that one of the things that I think that we should ask people more often is not, like, what do you do, but who are you? Like, who are you despite, like, that you're married or that you're a mom or that you have this job? Like, who are you really? And I think that that's one thing that I'm trying to relearn about myself and remind myself in the last couple of years, is that, you know, I don't have to do more to be worth more, like, because doing more can't add to who I am. Mm-hmm. So doing less can't subtract from who I am. Like, I'm still worth it whether I sit here and do nothing all day or if I clean the entire house top to bottom.
Yeah, because who you are innately, who you exist as, is already great.
Yeah, innately. Exactly. yes. And with the podcast, have you, like, always wanted to kind of do something along those lines? Or was it just you wanted to learn more about people's stories and that was what came to mind as a way to do that?
I think it was just something that kept pressing on my mind. And I feel like if you think of something more than like 10 times, because I often wonder, like, what is, you know, I know that you're spiritual and maybe a lot of your followers are spiritual, but if something keeps impressing upon you, then maybe it's not coming from within you. Maybe it's inspired. So I felt, I felt honestly like it was inspired. And lately trying to get my health and my kids' health and I have a full-time job. Like, lately it's been really slow. I have one episode out this year so far. And I don't feel that press as much right now. But all the stories that I have out already, I feel like were really important. So it wasn't like, I want to be a podcaster. It's just something that kept impressing upon my mind. And then I did it. And now I'm not going to say it's done, because I still love it. Did I want to be, like, you know, figure out a way to make it monetized and stuff like that? Yes. but it's a long game, and my life changed since then. But I want to make people connect more authentically. I want to help people stop being so hard on themselves. So that is still a passion of mine.
I love that. Yeah, I kind of felt the same way. It kept coming to my mind of like, I should do this. And I remember telling Brian about it, and he wasn't like not encouraging about it, but he was kind of like, well, what are you going to talk about? Like, what is it going to be about? And I was like, well, I don't know yet, but I just feel like I need to do it. And he was like, well, you kind of need to come up with some sort of plan first. And I was like, do you not know your wife? Like, I will make a plan. But when I started it, I remember the first day I recorded, I downloaded the app and I had the name in mind and I, you know, did the thing. And I instantly was like, you know what? I'm just going to, you know, record my first episode, because if I don't do it now and I don't publish it now, then this isn't going to happen.
Yeah, because
it's scary. Then I told like a few people and was like, okay, I'm going to tell these people because they're going to hold me accountable. And if they like what I had to say, then they're going to ask for more. And that's going to be, you know, part of my motivation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it is scary to like actually start it, you know? It's like, oh, what if it's stupid? What if blah, 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 blah. And then you just start it and it's like, oh, that wasn't that bad. So if people go listen to my podcast, the first couple of episodes, you know, I had to learn how to edit and blah, blah, blah. So it's, the audio is not perfect, but it's done. It's the story is still entertaining.
Yes, yes, yes. Same here. Like, I feel like my first couple episodes were very, not very different, but I feel like just the way that I was talking, looking back, if I were to re-listen, I feel like I could tell that I was nervous, even if other people couldn't tell.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now I feel a lot more confident in it, but I am almost like 70 episodes in. So I feel like that kind of makes sense.
And you're doing so great. Like, I just have to say, maybe the fact that you have health problems and can't work is the miracle or a blessing, because I was thinking the other day, because my, you know, toxic trait is that I compare myself to other people. So I'm like, oh, Abigail is like, has all this stuff prepared and she's so far ahead and blah, blah, blah. And then I thought to myself, well, she doesn't have a job and she doesn't have kids. And like, what else are you going to do with your time? Because you're just not feeling well. So it's kind of a blessing because you don't have anything else to take away from this. And so this is probably what God needs you to be doing right now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
and so like, I just see, even then I figured out how to change it around because I put myself in your shoes and I thought like, I don't know, you're just killing it and you're totally gonna make it. I'm so excited for you.
I really appreciate that. That means a lot. And with like your podcast, I know you're not doing a lot with it right now, but for people that are wanting to start one, I know we kind of just, you know, said just start it, but what are some other advice for people that may be listening that want to start a podcast?
Your advice to me has been my favorite, is that it's your podcast and you make your rules. Because everyone and their dog is going to tell you how to do it. I mean, mm-hmm. The first things first, you look up how to make a podcast, they're going to tell you, like, you have to niche down, you have to think of your specific audience. Like, I paid for a huge course and did all this work and began to lose the joy in it, honestly, because I was trying, my goal went from, you know, to sharing these stories to how to make money, how to market correctly, how to whatever. So like, there's all those resources out there, but don't lose yourself in those resources. Like, stay true to your story and your idea is probably my advice. But I'm not like super successful, so maybe don't listen to my advice.
No, I think like you, I don't know how many episodes you have out, but I feel like you have done enough that I feel like your advice is valid. But yeah, I completely agree. I think that sometimes like there's so many podcasts out there now, and you could say there's so many lifestyle podcasts out there. There's so many, you know, whatever out there. But I think that no matter how many similar-ish podcasts are out there, you're still going to be able to bring your own unique take to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure I've said this on the podcast before. I know I've said this to other people before, but like, no matter how many people I have on here that are talking about maybe even the exact same topic, the episode is going to be different each time because I'm going to be doing it later on and maybe have different perspectives of different things than I did the last time I talked about it. Or, you know, the guest is going to have a whole other perspective and life story and background to bring to the table. And I think sometimes it is so easy to just think that, like you said, you want to do all the right things and market it and, you know, have it be all polished. But I think that what it boils down to is everyone is unique. Everyone has their own story. And so to make sure that you're staying true to yourself. And if you want to have it be super edited and polished and all of that, and that's what, you know, fuels your joy and fire, then do that. Mm-hmm. But if that is not the type of person that you are, and you just want to be a little bit more raw and like one cut kind of thing, then do that. And don't feel so pressured to like put out an episode every single week just because some podcasts do that. Like there are plenty of podcasts out there that put out a podcast episode every other week or a couple at the beginning of the month. And there's some podcasts too that have like an episode out a week, but they only do that during the summer, or they only do that during the fall and winter. And in the spring and summer, they come out with nothing.
Yeah.
So I think that it's all unique to you. And as long as it's something that you are pouring your heart and soul into and giving your best, I think you can't really go wrong, even if you don't have that many listeners.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like business podcasts that will tell you exactly like, cause I wanted, when I first started with my little coaching program, it was like, I was like, I think I can handle one, like two a month. And then they were like, well, if you don't do one every week, you're not going to make it. And I'm like, oh, Well, look at them. They're right. I'm like not actively podcasting right this second. However, I feel like the one way to be sure that you make it is to just not stop and don't quit. Like if you, I think it depends. Do people, what's their reason for podcasting? I mean, obviously this world is money driven. We all need money to take care. Like money is a tool. And if you're passionate and you tell like you, I think you're very consistent. You're very passionate. I think, you know, do this for long enough, and I think the things that will pay will find you.
Mm-hmm.
So just don't quit.
Exactly. You're not stuck unless you stop.
Right.
That's what my pastor has said recently in sermons, and has, actually he has it in his book too. But I think that also with that, like your consistency and your whatever can change. Like if I started to get sicker, or I ended up, you know, being okay enough to work part-time, or I got pregnant and, you know, I'm taking care of a child now, you're, as long as you're upfront with your audience, like if you have a podcast and you realize like, hey, I can no longer put out an episode every week, do what works for you and just communicate with your audience. And if they are true listeners and followers and like really enjoy your podcast, like they will still stay around even if you aren't as consistent.
Yeah.
And your consistency looks different for everybody. Like you could work out three times a week and that could be your consistent. It doesn't have to be every single day for 2 hours.
And especially with my podcast, I'm so much like preaching. So I do voiceover. So I do an interview and then I pretty heavily edit out stuff and do voiceovers with my little thoughts that come in my mind. Cause sometimes when it's recording like this, I trip over my words and I'm like, so I cut that out, which I could totally leave it. But I find when I go back and re-listen, I think of these really beautiful things to say. And so I do a lot of editing. And where was I going with this?
About, I don't know, consistency. Everyone's podcast is unique.
And I do a lot of editing. Wow. See, this is why I do voiceovers. I have no idea where I was going with that. What I was going to say is my podcast, I was all about preaching, take care of your needs, be kind to yourself, love others, be vulnerable. And so I felt like I can't just get on and do this because I'm supposed to and come out with this episode. Like if I'm telling people to be loving and take care of themselves, if my needs right now are to focus on my family and to get my mental health in order, then I want to practice what I preach and I want to love myself where I'm at and take breaks, which maybe not be the recipe for a successful podcaster, but maybe I'm not a successful podcaster. Maybe I'm just a girl who, or a woman who deeply cares about my fellow humans and finds creative ways to connect and serve people around me, you know?
Absolutely. And I think too, it comes off more genuine when you're not just trying to push out content to push out content. Because I think that like solo episodes for me, I don't come out with solo episodes on a regular basis because I have other topics that I know that I'm going to be talking about, and I'm having a special guest to come alongside me and chat with me about it. But I feel like if I felt the pressure to be putting out a solo episode every single Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, then I feel like those episodes, while they may have some, you know, nuggets of value in them, I feel like it just wouldn't be the same as if when I have something that I feel genuinely passionate about talking about, then recording a podcast solo episode. And I think it's more genuine if you're not so concerned about making sure that you put out an episode every week or an episode out twice a week. And you do it when you feel led and passionate about what you're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
Hello, friends. So as you saw from the title of the episode, and as you can see with it cutting off in a slightly weird spot, I'm sure at this point you have figured out that that means this is part one of an episode. So part two will be out later this evening. If you listen to this not on the day it comes out, obviously both parts will be out per usual. Next week's episode is also a part one and two. So you guys are getting all the great longer conversations. At least I hope that you're enjoying the longer conversations like I have enjoyed having them with the people. But I just wanted to put that out there in case you did not pick up on that, that there is part two coming. And as always, you are loved, you are worth it, you are priceless, and I will talk to you all later.